Well, good afternoon and welcome into another Saturday of Woods and Water, South Carolina. Glad you tuned in. I'm Taylor. Taylor. Oh, she's not here today. I fired her. Oh, she's going to hate hearing that on the radio. No. She, taking a day off. You know, hey, 16, have a social life. You have a lot of schoolwork to do. And sometimes it just doesn't work out to help that out on a radio show. But anyway, so we'll make it through. I got to talk to Grant Woods this week. Dr. Grant Woods, Growing Deer TV. I'm trying to think how many episodes he's got now. It's funny to talk to him because he never thought it would be anything like what it's turned out to be. Ah, come on, computer. Go. Computer's slow today. It's feeling, well, of course, okay. 573? Yeah, a lot of them. And they're good. I mean, and if you've never been on Growing Deer TV, he covers it all. I mean, hunting, yes. But, he, you know, control burns and building soil. He told me last year that he hadn't put a disc in the ground in 5 years. Of course, now he does a lot of his no-till, but he'll talk to you about the rocky ground out there in Missouri where he lives. But he's built that soil up to where it's incredible. And, you know, I aspire one of these days when I have enough money to buy a no-till planter and a crimper, which probably won't be in this lifetime. So maybe somebody else can do it for me. But anyway, it's some good stuff. Habitat management, food plots, trail cameras, deer behavior, biology, trapping, miscellaneous stuff. What's miscellaneous? Antler sheds. Managing wildlife population, trapping predators, bow hunting, clothes, deer meat. How to process your, there's a good one. How to process your own deer. I think I'm going to try that this year. Actually, my brother and I have been talking and we might split us a vacuum sealer. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. So we'll see how that goes. I have done it before. It's a lot of work, but I think it's like completing the circle. And there's something to be said for doing that. You want to get political for a minute? Here's my politics for a minute. What we saw on stage the other night is a reflection of us as a society. One of my friends posted that, and I thought it was, wow. I mean, you know, you can't even have a disagreement. And social media is to blame for a lot of this. You can't have a disagreement, and people unfriend you. Why? Okay, politics over. I always play this every year, and it's really cool. So, well, wait a minute. Let's see. Let's get to the calendar events first because I want to get that out of the way, and then I'll play this video. Calendar events brought to you by Visit Anderson Green Pond Landing Event Center, where last weekend Patrick Walters won the Bassmaster Open. Congratulations to Patrick. Won it by like 3 pounds. So, said he was going to use it for down payment on a new camper because they adopted a puppy from the animal shelter, and if that thing doesn't hit 140 pounds, I'd be surprised. It's a big old puppy. He's going to have his own room when he gets older. But, yeah, so congratulations to Patrick. Cold, rainy, you know, kind of his kind of day. And it was funny because they were giving him grief because Bass Live is on championship days of the Opens this day, and when he took off his rain jacket he had on his shorts, you know, and they were talking about his shorts and giving him up and down grief about, because those were the, you know, close the door shorts or getting ready for final weigh-in shorts. It's pretty funny. You have to go back and look at it. But anyway, I got time to do this. Okay, waterfowl lottery application is now available through October the 15th, which 5 o'clock is when they go off. A $20 non-refundable fee is required when you apply, $5 for a youth applicant. Youth must be 17 ages or younger to apply for the youth hunts. Oh, they got some COVID stuff in here. Let's see. Following hunt locations will not be available on the waterfowl lottery hunt this year due to extensive and ongoing property renovations. Santee Delta Watery Heritage Preserve and Wildlife Management Area, Samworth and Clemson. And don't forget, when you get there, additional opportunities for lottery hunt applicants through the South Carolina Wildlife Partnership or the Pentel Partners for Youth Hunters. There's no additional cost to the applicant. All you got to do is on your application, check that you would like to enter the second chance drawing. And these are offered by private landowners, so you get to go in and hunt their places. And let's see, it doesn't cost you anything, and there are no points. You have to, let's see, if you opt in and you're not selected. What? Oh, well. I was saying that you don't have, if you're not selected, they'll, this DNR will automatically transfer your over to the secondary. Let's see. COVID. You got to wear a mask when you're inside with staff. It will be subject to temperature screening prior to. Let's hope that's gone by the time this rolls around. Let's see. Okay. So, anyway, there you go. Waterfowl lottery hunts are open. Lake Hartwell to open 13 areas for a seasonal hunting across South Carolina, Georgia. This came out of John Randall. Wednesday, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers announced 13 areas across Georgia and South Carolina will be open for seasonal hunting at Lake Hartwell. The Corps of Engineers Lake Hartwell office will open four of its larger recreation areas for archery and small game hunting during the regular 2021 Georgia hunting season. These areas include blah, 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 blah. And then new for 2020, hunters using the Hartwell Dam Quarry must call the Corps office and be added to a Corps hunting list in lieu of obtaining a paper permit. Small game hunting is allowed in all areas listed above, but only, okay, that's in Georgia. Okay, in South Carolina, here we go. Hunting areas fall under Fance Grove Wildlife Management Area for hunting. SCDNR should be contacted for information on licenses. Officials say hunting is restricted to undeveloped spaces in the following areas. South Carolina River, Anderson County, 125 acres. Glen Ferry Park, Anderson County, 211 acres. Weldon Island Park, Anderson County, 138 acres. Apple Island Park, Anderson County, 107 acres. Townville Park, Anderson County, 23 acres. River Forks Park, 182. Kent Creek Park, 48. Martin Creek, 60. And, Choestoea Park, Oconee County, 369 acres. I'm sure I could try to pronounce that, but I'd probably botch it, so I'm not even going to try. If you didn't hear this week, we had two drowning deaths in South Carolina. Down on the coast, the Sandpit River, two gentlemen launched out in a smaller aluminum boat, I don't know, 14, 16 feet maybe, reported missing. I think they were missing for a couple of days before they found one gentleman, and then they found the other the next day. And neither one of them had on life jackets. Of course, you're required to have them on board. You're not required to wear them. So, you know, they probably had them on the boat but didn't wear them. And the bad thing is there's a video of them as they were leaving. They were talking and having a good time and all. It just, man. But a life jacket doesn't do you any good in a compartment. And, you know, they're called accidents for a reason. You don't expect them to happen. You know, the kill switch in Taylor's boat stays attached to her life jacket for numerous reasons. You know, kill switch is a good idea. Cut that motor off. That way you don't have to chase the boat or it chases you, runs over you. But that life jacket is a lifesaver. And, you know, hey, those automatics are $200 or so. Well worth it. So wear your life jackets, folks. You know, if not for you, for everybody else around you. All right, when we come back, we got Grant Woods going to visit with us for a couple segments, and I'll be back in the fourth segment to finish things off. So y'all hang through the break. We'll be back with more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Told you we were in for a treat. We're joined by a good friend of mine, an old friend of mine. That's not age, Grant. Don't take that the wrong way. we were both a lot younger back in the late 80s. But a great friend of this show who's more than willing. It seems like anytime I call him, he's like, yeah, man, let's do something. And I want to welcome Dr. Grant Woods from Growing Deer TV back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Thanks for donating some more of your time to me.
Roger, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Oh, man, it is finally deer season. Do you think now we'll have a little semblance of at least people getting out in the woods and clearing their heads and getting a better outlook on life, Grant?
You know, just the great news is there are more people out in the woods than in decades. I read something the other day, you know, scientific, not just me, Bubba, talking that already in New York, 300% more folks have bought a hunting license than last year this time.
We saw
so there's a bunch of people getting out in the timber.
We saw that with turkey season. Turkeys tag sales across the U.S. were way up. Now, on the other hand, what is that? You know, that might have some impacts on seasons and limits if this continues, which I hope it continues, because it's great to have more people involved. I love having people involved, first timers especially, or people who did it and dropped it and now picking it up again. But do you think that's going to have an impact going down the road if this continues?
No, I don't. For a couple reasons. Now, turkey's a different story. Some states were a little worried. Turkey, not only turkey tag sales, but turkey harvest was up in some states. And turkey numbers are generically down in a lot of places for a lot of reasons. But let's don't ever forget predators, okay? Raccoons do eat turkey eggs, folks. But predators and lack of habitat, you know, big areas that aren't as productive as they used to be. But with deer, gosh, we've missed a doe harvest for 2 years in a row by over 20%. What states wanted or even land managers wanted.
Right.
And what achieved is down about 20%. So we got a couple of years. And a lot of these new hunters, I mean, we get tons of email. Man, they just want some venison, right? They don't care if it's got handles to drag it out of the woods with or not. So they just want some venison. I think this is so positive that maybe we will reduce. I didn't say eliminate. Don't get excited, folks. But reduce deer densities. And have a little bit healthier deer herd and healthier habitat, and that's mean mouse munching on those new white oak seedlings, whatever. And I just think this is great. And let's remember, folks, more people out there is more tax revenue, and most game agencies live and die by that tax revenue called the Pittman-Robinson Act. So it's just some really positive things out of this. And just don't forget that the current administration passed the Great American Outdoors Act.
Yep.
Which is the biggest source of funding for natural resources since the Pittman-Robinson Act. So we probably weren't even going to talk about this, but there's just been some huge milestones for hunters, fishermen, you know, kayakers, bird watchers, trail walkers, whatever. This has been a blessing. COVID's been ugly, but it's been a blessing for those of us that enjoy the outdoors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right. Not on the hunting side, but I hear a lot since we cover some hiking stuff and some mountain biking stuff. A lot more family units getting out there, doing the hiking thing, doing the fishing thing. So, yes, it's been good for the hunting and fishing industry, but for families in general, I think they've rediscovered time together.
Man, yeah, camping, whatever. We need such a big dose of that in this nation, right? Just quit arguing and go spend some time together, flip some rocks over, find a crawdad.
Get pinched.
Yeah. That'll teach you to mind your manners. So, yeah, I think this is so – I'm so hateful. I'm not hateful. I'm so sorry for those people that maybe lost a loved one or their jobs were impacted by COVID. I'm not making light of it.
Right.
But there's usually – you know, there's usually some good out of every situation. In this case, one of the goods has been the outdoors and people spending more time outside.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Glass half full.
There you go.
Well, look, got a few things I want you to help us out with. I mean, deer season has been in here for a couple, you know, almost 2 months now, and rifle season getting ready to ramp up here in the upstate. Bow season's in. In fact, I've been in the stand. I won't say I've gotten busted, but I've been seen. Let's put it that way. not smelled, but I've been seen. And that messes everything up. But look, the acorns. I mean, our acorns are already dropping here in South Carolina. You spend a lot of time here. Thoughts on acorns? I mean, I've heard back and forth. Do you fertilize acorn trees in the spring or do you not fertilize them? What's your take on that?
hey, acorns in general, right? The Creator had such a perfect plan. So deer, you know, during the spring and summer are growing and need a lot of protein, which is a, you know, a soybean field or native vegetation that was burned in last year to new growth, high in protein. And then that velvet sheds and the fawns aren't dependent as dependent on mother's milk. They're foraging along with the doe. And they switch to needing energy. Energy is just as important as protein, just a different time of the year. So there's deer are seeking, heavily seeking carbohydrates. And, of course, acorns are real high in carbs, low in protein. So it's just perfect timing. Again, the Creator, perfect timing.
Right.
So, you know, deer are going to acorns, folks. I don't care what your food plot looks like. If there's a big white oak falling, they're going to acorns.
They
so
are.
Scout those acorns, you know, figure out a way to get in and out with getting without getting busted, because acorns are a big deal right now.
How do you hunt a dropping acorn tree? I mean, if you're a bow hunter, do you want to be sitting right on top of that tree where you can watch them eat, or do you want to be on that entrance route coming in? Or how do you hunt that acorn tree that's dropping?
You know, acorns are a little different than little small food plots. Maybe the same area, but oftentimes, especially, you know, I'm in Missouri, and from me east to you, there's a lot of acorns, right? It's not
right.
like Western Kansas, Nebraska, where if you find a, they have bur oaks out there, a big bur oak, which is in the white oak family, it drop, and it's like a feeder, right? I mean, you get in that tree, because it's the only tree for 2 miles, and deer are coming to that tree. Where you and I are surrounded, anywhere we hunt, by likely thousands and thousands, unless you're in a big pine plantation, of acorn trees, white oaks. So, I like to shoot deer about 17 yards, so I want to get close to where they're feeding.
Okay.
And that may be the tree that the acorns are one next to. It just depends on the trees and, you know, the wind and all those factors. The problem is there's so many. Now each tree becomes like a little mini hidey-hole food plot, right?
Absolutely.
There's food all over.
That's it.
And so if there's a definitive coming and going, like, boy, there's a fresh clear cut over here and they're bedding in here on a cold day and they're going here to seek acorns, yeah, I want to be in between. But if that's not the case, I mean, it's just you're up there above, you know, Seneca in the mountains up above Walhalla, there's acorns everywhere. There is no coming and going. They're just everywhere. And
right.
It's tough to hunt because deer bed and feed in the same area, and it's really tough to pattern or get in there without getting busted. And in those situations, man, you're just going to bust some deer. Just, you know, I haven't figured out how not to. Get the big drone and drop in or something, but you're just going to bust some deer. Get in there because – thing about acorns, deer just kind of randomly move around, right, when there's
right.
a bunch of them.
Right.
It's not like I'm coming to the little food plot. They're randomly cruising, picking out the best acorns. So get in amongst there. If you bust one, you hate it, but go on because another deer is likely to walk by.
Absolutely. Favorite acorn tree, I guess, be a white oak. Deer
yeah,
tend to
absolutely.
Go to those first.
White oak. Early season, if you've planted sawtooths, they tend to drop early. Problem with sawtooths, they're about done by the time season opens in most states.
Okay.
You're hunting national forest native vegetation to white oak. And the reason is, of course, white oaks have less tannic acid. Acid is bitter,
okay.
right? Real acidic coffee is real bitter. So less acid, and they're much more preferred than the red oak family. So white oaks, but acid's also a preservative. So the white oaks early on, and then they lay on the ground a while, get a warm rain on them. They're gonna germinate or rot or whatever, and then
right.
red oaks start falling. A lot higher acid content, that's a preservative, and there may be red oaks that are still good come turkey season.
Wow. They preserve that well.
They do, and it depends on how much rain and temperature. You know, if it's warmer and wet, they're going to germinate. But if it's a little cooler like where I am and a little drier, yeah, I hate it when there's a giant red oak crop because now turkeys are like deer. They're spread out all over the forest because there's food everywhere, right? Fortunately, turkeys yodel, so you can find them.
Right.
Deer don't yodel too
deer,
loud, so
no.
it's tough to find.
They're a little tougher to find, that's right. But you're right, especially, and we did some thinning in some hardwoods, and we left, you know, 8 to 10 oaks per acre.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, I tell you, every one of those oaks is surrounded by a 7-year cutover. And you may be sitting on this tree, and you can see this other tree over here 50 yards over there, and there are the deer over there, but they're not under your tree.
Yeah.
Because they just wandered out from there, wherever they were bedded in right there, and then back in the thicket they go.
Yeah, you got up, yawned, took a bite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, folks, it's kind of the same. Deer hunters, we all complain in different cultures, you know, but same because, like, think about those folks up in Iowa, God bless them, that big storm come through and blew over all that corn.
Right.
there is food and cover for about 150 miles right through Iowa, and deer don't have to leave. Like, I'm going to roll over and eat this cob of corn, and I'm still in cover.
That's right.
It's like getting, you know, breakfast brought to you in bed. I mean, it's just, oh, man. I mean, it's damaging and huge economic loss and life loss and all those things. But for the deer hunter up there, it's going to be a tough season, no doubt.
Absolutely. Oh, gosh, we're so close in. Let's start something. Biggest mistake deer hunters are going to make this year, maybe have already made?
I've already made several, so I can pick from my own here. But, you know, the biggest one, I think, overall is simply not hunting enough. Don't talk yourself out, well, the wind's wrong or it's hot or Clemson's playing football or, you know, whatever it is. Clemson playing football the other day, I just checked my phone every now and then. They're playing the Citadel. I just looked at score mountain. But go hunting, man. Just get out there. Because even if you don't get a deer, the experience helps you become a better hunter. What did you learn from that hunt? So the biggest mistake is go hunting.
Second biggest, do you have one?
You know, not paying attention to your scent. You know, there's a lot of great scent control products out there, but we're still breathing. We're respirating. So we're pumping. We're pumping scent out. So, man, play that wind. One of the best scent control products you can use is mouthwash. Clean up that breath, folks. And don't eat sugar while you're in the stand, because, like, you could bait me with Snicker bars. Man, you do have some Snicker bars down in Piedmont, I'd come find them, I promise you, man. So, you don't eat sugar because sugar causes bacteria that makes you have bad breath really grow in your mouth. So, like me, I'm a kidney transplant patient. I have to take medicine twice a day, you know, early and late, so right when prime hunting, like, I'm going, doctor, what'd you do this for, man? Why am I trying to be perfectly still? I got to reach in my bag, get my medicine, pills right around the bottle, snack, and I just eat dry saltine crackers because there's no sugar in there, and I don't want to make my breath even worse than it's going to be.
See, I brush my teeth before I go hunting every time, but that's just a thing, you know? I just like to have my teeth clean, but I never thought about it that way.
I keep a bottle of mouthwash. I don't care the brand. I use an oxidizer, a brand that oxidizes because it's really good at killing bacteria.
Yep.
You know, and it's not all pepperminty or whatever. I just want that bare bones oxidizer mouthwash, and I use it really good. I mean, I actually read the instructions. You know, do it for a minute, spit it out, put some more in, do it for another minute. And I have found that I think I'm seeing more deer. I mean, I just think mouthwash, and there's nothing for sale here, right? I don't care. Go to local Stuff Mart, buy some mouthwash, but I tend to like the stuff that's not all flavor, you know, and send it up with men or whatever. I'm not trying to smell good. I just don't want to be smelled at all.
Hang on, Grant. We'll be back. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's like Grant says, when he starts talking, it's, you know, about something you're passionate about, it's hard to stop. But you did great. You ended it, man. You heard the music come up. Boom.
I'm going to get lucky every now and then.
Every now and then. I applaud your radio sensibilities here. During the break, we were talking just a second. You wanted to come back and talk about trees just a little bit and getting to produce more acorns. So go ahead. Take a minute and tell us what you wanted to talk about.
You know, I think folks in parts of South Carolina, Georgia especially, get this. You drive by all a pecan or pecan, depending on where you're from, groves out there. And one thing I want you to notice, they're spaced so the tree can develop a full canopy. You know, they kind of know, okay, this variety of pecan tree is going to spread out 30 feet on each side, whatever it is, so I'm going to plant them 60 feet apart or more. And that's so true. My good friend, Dr. Craig Harper, went Clemson with him. Great scientist, really specializes in native vegetation stuff. Craig has found through years of research, not one little two-year master program, I'm talking years and years of research, that the best thing you can do for an oak tree to make it have more acorns is not fertilizing. I used to think fertilizing was good myself, and Craig taught me different, but is to kill the trees next to it. So let's just think about it real simple. Dig real deep back to seventh grade science and photosynthesis. C6H12O6, kind of the output of photosynthesis in simplified form. Well, that's glucose. That's sugar. That's energy. So when a tree has a bigger canopy, more leaf surface area, it can photosynthesize more energy, which results in more overall growth, more wood and more acorns. Or they thin pine trees so to grow quicker, whatever it is. So you've got this favorite white oak out there in the timber, man. It, you know, you can get there, you can approach it and hunt it without getting busted. But it's like a lot of trees in the timber, right? It's big, but it grows up and it doesn't much of canopy. Get you some hack and squirt herbicide, get you a hatchet, go out there and kill sweet gums or whatever's right around it. Chainsaw them down, whatever you're doing, and let that tree canopy expand, and it will make more acorns and likely sweeter acorns, because remember, the byproduct of photosynthesis is glucose, the world's simplest sugar.
Sugar.
Mm-hmm. And sweeter acorns attract more deer.
Seventh grade math, science. I've forgotten a lot, but it makes sense.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, boy, you want to, and you see this, right? You see that old oak tree in somebody's yard or in a, you know, an office complex or whatever. There's no trees around, and that thing just rains acorns every year. You're like, well, man, that thing is raining again. There ain't no acorns where I hunt, but this thing is raining acorns. That's because it's got no competition. It's getting that full benefit of the sun all day long.
Absolutely. Speaking of trees, you did a little short video on your Facebook page about summer versus fall food plot planting and oaks versus pines.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. I love it. Talk just a minute about it.
Yeah, okay. So we all know you've seen a storm come through, Hugo. So I was in South Carolina, folks, when Hugo come through, so I had a lot of experience with that. But, you know, an oak tree tips over, this big old fibrous root mat tips up. You almost never see pine trees tip over. They just break off. And that's because a pine tree has a really deep taproot. Think like a carrot, except, you know, infinitely bigger sticking down in the soil.
Okay.
Well, because a pine has that deep taproot and gets really deep to get moisture, it's not taking much surface moisture out. So you can plant a food plot right up to the edge of pine trees and, man, it'll do great. And sometimes in a droughty summer, I know y'all didn't have a drought this summer, but in a droughty summer, sometimes in a little bit of shade of a pine tree, your food plot actually does better than out in the open field where the sun's heat is evaporating the soil moisture out. But an oak tree is different. Oak tree has a real shallow, fibrous root system. It's about as big as the tree's canopy in general. So if that canopy sticks out 30 feet on one side, those roots are reaching out 30 feet or more. So when you plant next to an oak tree during the summer, when it's that oak tree is actively taking moisture out of the soil, it will create a little drought area around it, and that little bitty soybean or buckwheat or whatever you got planted, it can't compete with that established oak root, and the oak will take all the water, and you see these dry, just desert areas along the edge of your little food plot.
Sure.
And that's because oaks or hardwoods, sweet gums or whatever, are sucking all the moisture out of the ground. And that's during the summer, but remember in the fall and winter, those trees aren't really taking a lot of moisture up, so you could plant a fall food plot right up to the edge, and it'd be green and look good. So in those little bitty food plots, hidey-holes I call them, great hunting locations, I grow a forage in there just to keep the weeds at bay, but I don't try to grow a crop that's going to feed deer. It's too small, so I'm going to feed a lot of deer.
Okay.
But I plant something to keep the soil from eroding, keep weeds from growing, all that good stuff. And then I come in, you know, this time of year a little earlier and plant my fall food crop knowing that it will grow really well even up to the edges of the trees.
And from being on Growing Deer TV, I know you like in those small food plots, you like clover because there's a lot of clover.
A lot of tonnage there.
I like
clover or I like blends, you know, clover with some cereal rye and wheat notes and throw a few brassicas in there. I really like blends more than any one species because we all know our clover – even as far south as you are, over by the coast, if you get over by the coast, it's pretty warm. But that clover, it'd go a little brown or dormant in later season, right? And, man, I want to hunt that late season. I like to hunt every day I can. So just through time, I've learned I'd rather have a blend. I'll probably have an annual clover in there, like a crimson, really inexpensive, strong clover. There's other ones that are just as good. And I'll throw some wheat in there or cereal rye where it's colder. Cereal rye will grow down to 28 degrees. Deer love radishes. They eat those early seasons. So when I put my food plot blend together, I'm thinking what do they want to eat early?
Okay.
What do they want to eat mid-season? And what do they want to eat late season? It's kind of like I call it a time-release fertilizer blend or time-release food plot blend.
Okay.
That way there's something that attracts deer all during the hunting season.
Growing Deer TV.
And let's take that one step further. Okay. I'm always going to have a clover in there because, you know, clover attracts turkeys during early spring. So that little food plot becomes an awesome strut area.
Multi-use.
Multi-use.
Multi-use. Well, look, we got about 4 minutes. I'm going to give it to you. Mock scrape, something I'm more of a passive deer hunter. I just like to go sit and watch guys actively, and I've seen some of your videos with mock scrapes and all. Take 4 minutes. Talk to us about making a mock scrape.
You know, every hunter, gun or bow, but especially bow hunters, are pinch point hunters. They want to get the deer relatively close in a certain yardage. So food sources we talked about, an acorn tree, whatever. Well, something that could be really create a great pinch point is a mock scrape, or just a scrape you made versus waiting for deer to open one up. And that can be early season, mid-season, late season. So I simply take a T-post and go cut me an oak sprout or something that has a horizontal limb about 4.5 feet off the ground.
Okay.
That's about the ideal height for deer to scrape. And I use oaks just because they're really tough. Because if you get your mock scrape going, and I've had video this, deer will just break the tree down, just
trash
dump
it.
Them, wear them out. I mean, they just get mad because there's other deer in their area, and that dominance kicks in. And I mean, they just dump it. So I just take a T-post early on. A lot of mine are already out right now, but you can make them any time of year.
Okay.
And I take, an oak sapling that's got a limb about 4.5 feet high. So you can maybe cut the top out, a little bit bigger sapling or something. You just get that limb. And I use buck scent because boys are very competitive. We all know that.
Right.
And you go where that summer basher group or that fall basher group's hanging out, all of a sudden you put a mock scrape in there. They may not even be scraping much yet. And put some buck scent on it, they're going to come check it out. So it's a great place to put a trail camera or even hunt over. And then deer will use it even more than a natural scrape. Let's say you got a natural scrape right on the edge of your food plot, and it's kind of thick right behind it. Could be the old saber-toothed tiger, coyote, bobcat, something hanging back in there. You put that scrape out about 18 yards from the edge of timber where they can see all around it because deer have great peripheral vision.
Right.
They're very comfortable using it because they know they're not about to be attacked. And so remember, a number one motivating factor for a deer is survival, not the rut, not feeding, but survival. And when you make it easier for them to use the phone booth, those of us that are old enough remember pay phone booths. They're just a point of communication. Well,
sure.
That's what a scrape is. Hey, I'm here. How are you doing? I'm the big bad boy. I'm kind of cute. I'd like a date. That's just a point of communication. And you put that point of communication out in a nice lighted area, you're not worried about being attacked. But no one wants to go use that phone booth in the back of a dark alley. And that's what putting that scrape right in the edge of a thicket is. It's right in that dark alley where there might be danger lurking back there.
Wow. And I have seen some of your videos, boy. Some of those bucks just, they just go nuts over that tree.
Man, and, you know, I don't know why more people don't use mock scrapes. They're super, you know, easy and expensive, all that stuff. And you can put one, just think about this, folks, about 17 yards in front of your bow stand.
Yeah.
You know, you're hunting over an acre, 2 acre food plot. A lot of deer can be out of range. I was in a small hide hole about a tenth of an acre yesterday morning, and a couple of does and some yearling bucks passed my limit of 30 yards. I practiced much further, but, you know, I hunt in the mountains. Our deer are very athletic, folks. They climb up and down mountains.
Right.
Our deer can move out of the way of an arrow really quickly. They're not like a fat Iowa deer that just kind of waddles off out through there. So over 30 yards, I don't shoot a deer because they're likely to move before my arrow gets there. So I watched some deer pass, and I was thinking when I first climbed up a tree, oh, gosh, I forgot to put a mock scrape here this year.
Uh-oh.
And sure enough, they passed through the backside of the food plot, and if I'd had a mock scrape, it's likely they would at least warm. Sometimes they don't use the scrape.
Sure.
They just walk a yard or two downwind and smell it.
That's right.
Why I like to put about 17, 18 yards. So even if they're hanging up just a little bit, smelling it like a turkey hanging up on your decoy, it's still within range.
Grant, as always, we're at the end. It passes so fast, but I appreciate you doing it. Growing Deer TV, you're on episode 572. Thanks as always, and, man, good to talk to you. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Roger, thanks for having me as a guest.
Thank you, sir. And welcome back to Woods and Water South Carolina for this Saturday. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Grant. Always a good time. You know, he and I go back to, I don't know, the late 80s, I guess, when he was in Clemson doing his research projects and all. And we stayed in, I guess we lost contact for a few years, and then after I started the radio show, kind of started in his being in his world again. And he's always so gracious. I mean, it's normally it's less than a couple of hours. I'll email Grant, and it's boom right back. Unless he's out hunting or filming or something. In fact, the other day when we had set up a time to doing it, to talk a little bit, and he emailed me like an hour before. He goes, "I got to run out and do some filming right quick. I don't think I'll be late, but just in case." I said, "No problem." So he's very gracious with his time, and I hope you will go check out Growing Deer TV. And a story, I don't know if most of you know it, but you know Grant had a kidney transplant back when he was in high school or college, and a couple of years ago it started deteriorating very rapidly, and his daughter, his oldest daughter Riley, stepped up and donated her kidney to him, which is a really cool story. And Grant says his doctors tell him his kidney functions are better than they ever have been before in his life. But a great story, and don't ask him about it because he'll tear up and start crying. I promise you. I've seen it happen. So, I wanted to do the old tree stand. I'm trying to think here because I got something else to end the show that I really don't want to. No, I'm going to do it. We'll save it for later. It's a good one, though. All right. Why hunting is conservation. You know, we have an 11% excise tax that we pay on pretty much everything we use. Generates about $673 million annually. Has generated more than $12.2 billion cumulatively. And it began in 1937 when we requested an 11% tax on guns, ammo, bows, and arrows to directly fund conservation. And we just had National Hunting and Fishing Day last Saturday. Missed that on the show somehow or another. Yeah. And the same on the fishing side, too. And we're going to have a lot more on the fishing side of things here in South Carolina shortly, I assume. More on that coming. There's a lot of stuff that's kind of out there that's going to be fun, that's taking me kind of in new directions. But it's all good stuff. It's not taking me. It's adding to what I already do, like I need something else. Let's see. Big news out of Major League Fishing. You know, back a year ago now, Major League Fishing, they've been rumored for years, and Major League Fishing acquired FLW Fishing League Worldwide. Announced September the 29th, which would have been Tuesday, Tulsa, Oklahoma. There was a big media phone call, Zoom thingy, or whatever, to further elevate the sport of tournament bass fishing and align multiple circuits to one company. Major League Fishing announced today its unification with Fishing League Worldwide as one brand, transitioning all FLW brands to MLF. So in other words, FLW no longer exists as an entity. You know, they're still going to keep it. It's called the Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit, the Toyota Series, the Phoenix Bass Fishing League, the Abu Garcia College Fishing, and High School Fishing will all carry the MLF logo and continue the five biggest fish format. You know, bring your five biggest to the scales. MLF will continue as catch, weigh, and release. You kind of saw what was coming. Don't know if it's good or bad yet, but you knew it was coming. So what you got is it's called the MLF Big Five, and that's those four. And then you're going to have on the Major League Fishing side, I got a graph here. So you got MLF. And then it drops down. You have event divisions. So you have the Bass Pro Tour, the Cups, and then the Big Five. And under the Big Five is the Tackle Warehouse, the Toyota, the BFLs, College and High School Series. No, I don't like change like this. You know, my mom, back in 2016, I fished an FLW event as a co-angler, which was really cool. I'm glad I did it. If you ever have a chance to do it, please do it. Fish as a co-angler on whatever tournament circuit or whatever. And I got a little certificate, and somehow or another, my mom got a hold of it and framed it and gave it to me, which is pretty cool. So, But yeah, so all the hats I've got and all the shirts I've got, all the stuff I've got that's got FLW on it, it's now collector's items. I don't know what I got something I got to start here in just a few minutes, but I don't want to. Oh, okay. We'll do this. Board denies controversial plan to put luxury ecotourism resort on South Carolina Barrier Islands. This has been going on for a while. Citizens chimed in to reject a proposed resort on an uninhabited low country barrier island. The luxury development was proposed as an ecotourism use on Bay Point Island, which is considered an important habitat for shorebirds and sea turtles. The location was a major consideration of the zoning board's rejection. You know, the concerns, you know, long and numerous. I mean, you got a barrier island. Face it, folks, there are just some places you don't need to build and live, okay? It's okay to set up a tent and you take it with you, but it's just not. So they started a online petition last October, and Bay Point Zone is a natural preserve. Tourist accommodations can only be built there if they are part of an ecotourism project. And according to the definition used by Beaufort County, it's Beaufort County in South Carolina, Beaufort County, North Carolina, organized educational and mainly outdoor recreation with or without lodging that invites participants to learn about and promote ecological preservation, conservation, and sustainability. 50 villas, wellness center, restaurants, cooking school, whatever. Anyway, not going to happen. So a win for our coast. I love this. Just how stupid do you think we are here in Beaufort County? Okay, so there's that. Sometimes environmental causes lose, and real environmental causes win. Okay, so I got this I want to play, and it'll pretty much end the show, and it's pretty much self-explanatory, so just hang in there. We'll be back next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Catch this.
Hi, I'm Jim Shockey, and welcome to the show. 17 years ago, I stood on this spot wearing these clothes, including this hat. It was a little less worn in those days, and recorded the very first introduction for our television show called Hunting Adventures. Today, I'm standing here recording the very last introduction to the last show of Hunting Adventures, and it's with mixed feelings that I am doing this. It's been an amazing ride. It's been an honor, and it's been a pleasure to share with all of you those adventures in so many different and exotic places around the world. So today, we're going to look back. It's a retrospective of 17 unbelievable years of our television show called Hunting Adventures. When I first came up with the concept of Hunting Adventures as a television program, I remember the response from the first people that I passed the idea by, and it was 100% it won't work. They said it wouldn't work because at the time, we're talking 20 years ago, hunters were only interested in turkeys and white-tailed deer. This is what everybody told me. And I said, I don't think so. At that time, I was writing adventure articles for hunting magazines that 35 years ago, everybody said wouldn't fly. No one wants to read about what they can't do themselves. They want to read about whitetails and turkeys. And 15 years, I'd written articles about travel and adventure and the spirituality of being in the wilderness, the wildlands. And it worked. I was publishing at that time, you know, up to 30 articles a month, one a day I was producing and writing, and people were reading it. So I couldn't see why on television suddenly it would be the same thing that everyone told me back, you know, 15 years before that, and that the viewers wouldn't be interested in seeing something other than turkey hunting and whitetail hunting.
Hi, I'm Jim Shockey. Welcome to this week's show. We're going to Africa this week. We're going to Tanzania, to the home of the Maasai warriors. You better put on your long underwear this week. We're headed up into the high Arctic to hunt with the Inuit for the most dangerous big game animal on the continent, the ice bear.
Oh no, you didn't have it on? Whoa. It's right in camp. It's in bear, and I said, where? And they said, oh, it's right. It was right beside the igloo.
What I told them was, hunters are hunters, and they will appreciate a good hunt, regardless of whether the video is about hunting a turkey, a white-tailed deer, a moose, a bear, or a mouse.
I'm working on my collection of smiles.
If you bring the hunters with you, if you take them on the same journey so that they feel they're with you on the hunt, experiencing what you're experiencing, they feel the cold, they feel the wind, they feel the despair when it's not going well, and they feel the joy when it does go well. They will watch. It doesn't have to be about a specific animal. It doesn't have to be about a certain way of hunting for a certain type of animal. It just has to be about hunting, and it has to be true to what hunters and hunting is all about.
20 days. If I seem a little disheveled, it's because it's just overwhelming.
Huh? Your first bear.
Sonny. 16 years old, first bear.
What do you think of that?
Good hunt, Jim.
This is a trophy week this week.
Yeah, I guess. Next year, me hunt it.
That's one of the rarest things you ever see is a snow leopard. Wow. That was almost snow leopard lunch.
I told you I could do it.
Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine?